We now convene the March 16th, 2005 Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, and we're having a informational session on the Board of Nursing, and we welcome you here today.
Thank you. Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I'm Joan Bouchard, and I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. And to my left is Pat Miles, who's the business manager for the Board of Nursing. And also here with me today is Kim Cobrain, who is the program executive for investigations and compliance. So we are happy to be here, and we're here to speak with you about the Board of Nursing. We feel that nurses help keep Oregonians healthy, and there's a lot of nurses out there. We regulate about 61,000 nurses in the state, and nurses are the largest group of healthcare professionals in the state, and as such, the Board of Nursing is also the largest health licensing agency in Oregon. The 61,000 people that we regulate are registered nurses, licensed practical nurses, nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialist, certified registered nurse anesthetist, certified nursing assistants, and certified medication aides. And the Oregon State Board of Nursing exists to safeguard the public's health by providing guidance for and the regulation of entry into the practice, nursing education, and also continuing safe practice of nurses. The board employs a staff of about 40 people who assist the board members and serve the 61,000 licensees. The agency is comprised of five sections. One is licensing and certification and customer service. One is nursing investigations and compliance. Another section is consulting and policy. And the fourth major department is central support and administration. And these sections of the board determine licensure and certification requirements. They issue licenses and certificates, and we also renew the licenses of these 61,000 nurses and nursing assistants. We interpret the Oregon Nursing Practice Act in terms of standards of practice and scope of practice. We investigate complaints and take disciplinary action against licensees and certificate holders who do violate the Nursing Practice Act. We evaluate and approve nursing education programs and nursing assistant training programs in the state, and we maintain the nursing assistant registry and administer nursing assistants' competency and evaluations. And one of the things that the board is also increasingly doing is helping nurses with policy issues. We're increasingly getting a lot of requests from nurses as the healthcare system is constantly changing out there about policy analysis and policy development under specific scope of practice and standards of practice issues. The presentation outline, what we had planned to do today is the phase one, which would give you the agency overview, the mission goals, and a brief history of the agency, program and target group summaries, organizational chart, and the performance measure overview. And that is our understanding that we are just to discuss phase one this morning. The mission statement of the Board of Nursing is that the board is to safeguard the public's health and well-being by providing guidance for and regulation of entry into the profession, nursing education, and continuing safe practice. That's a somewhat new mission statement for the board. Before, we had just that we would regulate. But as I said, nurses are increasingly turning to the board for guidance with practice issues. So in our mission statement, we have added that the board also provides guidance for as well as regulation. The agency's four goals are to ensure the safety of those Oregonians cared for by nurses and nursing assistants, regulating in a manner that sustains a maximum number of nurses available in the workplace without jeopardizing public safety, to provide excellent customer service to our licensees and our other stakeholders, and to effectively participate in joint efforts with other partners to address the nursing shortage. The board, at its last strategic planning session in spring of 2004, also set some long-term goals, and these are shown on the screen, is to implement a continued competency model for licensees to promote safe nursing practice. I think that's a question that is increasingly coming to not just nursing board, but to all regulatory boards about we screen very carefully for competency when someone enters the profession. They have just graduated from a nursing education program. They take a national licensure exam. But the question that we get asked very frequently is, when you renew somebody's license, what are you doing to assure that they are continually competent throughout their professional career? So that is an issue that we're looking at. Another goal.
You said that there's a national licensing requirement. Does that is that in lieu of or in addition to state licensing, testing or something like that?
Chair Richardson, that is a national nursing licensure exam that's given in every state, and that is the examination that we require.
Whoever passes that, then assuming that they qualify for other ways, they can get a license to practice here?
Chair Richardson, that's correct.
Thank you. Yeah. You also just mentioned to me while I'm thinking about it, it seems like LPNs in Oregon, we have a lot fewer than other states. Is that something that does the commission work at all or the board in trying to promote certain areas to increase the number?
Chair Richardson, it is correct that the number of LPNs in the state has decreased over the last probably 5 to 10 years. I think the reason for that is that in Oregon, all the LPN programs were the first year of an ADN program, nursing education program. So it was called the LPN exit. Nurses could go through the first year of the ADN program, and if they wished, they could exit and take the national exam for LPNs and become licensed as a licensed practical nurse, but over 90% of them would go on for the second year and become a registered nurse. So they weren't staying in the LPN role. Mm-hmm. In addition, the LPN role was really started in the 1950s, so a lot of the LPNs are getting near to retirement age, and so they retired. And so there was a combination of the retirements and nurses coming into the pipeline, not staying as LPNs. Yes, one of the things that the Oregon Leadership Council is looking at is starting what we call pure LPN programs. And I think the first one is started at Rogue Community College this year. And these are for people who they know they want to become an LPN and stay in that role. And, they would always have the chance to go on if they wanted to. But they wouldn't have to meet the requirements for an ADN program in order to take the LPN program. So we are addressing that.
Okay, great. It sounds like community college system is working like it should. Yeah. There's a need and it gets filled.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Another long-term goal of the board is to address and resolve nursing workforce regulatory issues. We are partnering with other nursing organizations regarding the nursing shortage. One of the roles that we see with the Board of Nursing is to look at our rules and regulations and to look at what we do and to make sure that we are not putting up any unnecessary barriers for people coming back into the profession or entering the profession. So some of the things we're looking at is our reentry program and our reentry requirements, and also English language proficiency. We've also been asked the question about military educational equivalency. So those are some of the issues that we're working on to see that we're not putting up any unnecessary barriers, but at the same time we're keeping a certain standard of safety for our practitioners. Another long-range goal is strengthening alliances with relevant nursing, healthcare, and regulatory entities to influence nursing and nursing healthcare policy. And as I said, we've worked very closely with many partners around the state to try to address the nursing shortage issue. And then the last one was to evaluate the benefits and detriments to Oregon joining the National Interstate Nurse Licensure Compact and pursuing legislation if it was appropriate. The Board of Nursing was established in 1911 to regulate nursing practice, so we are one of the oldest health regulatory boards, and it's an other-funded agency supported by licensure fees and certification fees. The next we're going to go to is our stakeholders, who the stakeholders are for the Board of Nursing. We serve a variety of groups with sometimes very divergent goals and needs. But the most important stakeholder for the Board is the citizens of Oregon who receive nursing care. And I think a lot of times that the Board of Nursing is mixed up sometimes with the professional associations, but the Board is very clear that it is their purpose for the protection of the public. We also, stakeholders of the Board are employers of nurses. Approximately half of the nurses in the state work in hospital settings, so the hospital employers are a major employer of ours. We also have them in other areas such as the nursing homes, schools of nursing, school nurses in elementary and high school programs, public health, home health agencies, hospice, etc. We also, the stakeholders are nursing education programs. The nursing education programs exist in 14 community colleges throughout the state and in 5 4-year institutions. The numbers of these applicants to these programs is as much as 300% of their capacity. We are seeing that, that there are many more nurses who want to go into nursing now than we can handle, and we have the capacity to handle into our nursing education programs.
Are there plans to rectify that? I mean, what is
there's,
the benefit?
Yeah, there's several reasons for that, and I think that the major reason is that there is a lack of nursing faculty for teaching the additional students that are coming into the program, so there are issues that are being addressed with that. Some of the four-year programs have started accelerated programs to try to get nurses to go back and get more expertise in becoming and teaching nursing.
Do you know if there's been any discussion about using distance learning techniques?
And yes, there has been, and that's another area that they're looking at very carefully. The simulation labs are starting throughout the state. I think there are 3 now with the capacity of wanting up to 20 of them. That, I think, is a very promising way of maybe looking at the lack of clinical facilities that we have in the state to teach nurses. And I think that the long-distance learning is a major way of addressing that issue.
I would hope that you would really focus on that and that there would be leadership from your board in promoting that. Sometimes in education there's talk, but a tendency not to step out because, you know, people, there's comfort zones.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology is there. The wiring is already there. We know the shortages are present. We know that there's a number of, I mean, we have a population that want to be nurses that can't be have their needs met, and so why not make changes and really promote it so that Oregon can lead out in showing that we can utilize the 21st century's technology to teach in a way that will produce a higher number of graduates, which is really what we need to do without just building more facilities. Usually that's the solution. We need to build more facilities so that we can hire more teachers to come in and teach. In the old way things were done, of course, we don't have an availability of enough teachers, and so now we have to wait for them to become certified to be instructors, and everything bogs down.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have excellent teachers who can then have that teaching ability broadcast to a dozen campuses across the state, and utilizing the technology that's already in place and the locations in place for a very low expense, we can have a very high recovery and in return and produce a lot more highly qualified licensed nurses. I would hope that you could lead off in that.
And Chair Richardson, the board agrees with that philosophy, and they have visited these simulation centers, and they have already started looking in their administrative rules to change our administrative rules to allow for this to happen. So they're very supportive of that whole philosophy, that it's not just build more schools, but to use the schools that we have and use technology in different ways to meet that need. Mr. Chair?
Good.
And
Senator Monsanto.
Thank you.
Nurse.
We spent a full committee meeting talking about the nursing shortage and distance learning and simulation labs, and actually toured the one that we have in Gresham. And it's amazing the leadership
that's taking place in this state. And we had even the governor's office was there, the representative of the hospital, nurses. So it is an issue that is being addressed, and it just takes time. Yeah.
Well, whatever we can do to help.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
In addition, some of our other stakeholders are the nursing assistant training programs. We have more than 60 nursing assistant training programs throughout the state. Some of them are in community colleges, and many of them are in the long-term care facilities to train the nursing assistants. Some of them are also in high schools, and some of them are in proprietary businesses that run the nursing assistant programs. Some of our other stakeholders are, of course, nursing and other health-related organizations, organizations like the Hospital Association, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Oregon Healthcare Association. We work very closely with them around multiple issues regarding nursing. Then, of course, one of the other stakeholders is the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, which I have referred to previously. It was formed several years ago to bring the nursing organizations together to address the nursing shortage. It's made up of the Oregon Council of Deans from the baccalaureate programs, the Oregon Council of Associate Degree Programs, the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives, which are the nurse administrators, the Oregon Nurses Association, and the Oregon Board of Nursing. And as I said, we have met probably for the last 5 years. We have a strategic plan for how to address the nursing shortage, and we are making progress on those goals that we have set. One of the goals was to establish the Oregon Center for Nursing, which was established in 2002 and is up and running and plays a major role in the recruitment of nurses recruitment of people into the nursing profession. Other stakeholders are, of course, other state and federal agencies. The board works closely with a lot of other state agencies, such as the Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities, the Office of Rural Health, of course, many other health-related boards. And we're also a member of the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, which is a national organization that brings together on a yearly basis all the boards of nursing in the United States, and they are the ones that contract and develop for the National Nursing Exam. And, of course, last but certainly not least, our stakeholders are the 61,000 licensees that we have. And here on the slide, I kind of have broken it down to how many licensees there actually are. There's about 39,000 registered nurses in the state, currently active in the state. About 4,000 licensed practical nurses, and Chair Richardson, you said have it decreased, and yes, it used to be up to 5,000, and now we're down to 4,000, so we need to start building that up again. 2,000 nurse practitioners, and that includes nurse midwives. We have about 400.
Hold it up for a moment. Would you tell me what does an LPN earn?
How much does it earn? I do have that.
I think
they earn about $36,000 a year on the average. That's the average in Oregon is $36,000 a year.
Okay.
And for RNs, the average is about $54,000. That doesn't include overtime or benefits.
And CNA?
And the CNA is about $22,000 a year.
So if we have CNA, you have to have CNAs, but if a person was contemplating a career, and they're thinking about being a CNA if they have the capacity and whatever, you know, and it seems like they, and I don't think it's counseling to be directed into LPNs. But certainly there's factors at issue.
And some of them do. Some of them do go on to become LPNs, and some of them go on to become registered nurses.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So we have about 400 registered nurse and ethicist. We have the newest group that the Board of Nursing is mandated to regulate are clinical nurse specialists, and I think that was passed in the 2001 legislative session, and we have about 150 of those. And then we have about 18,000 certified nursing assistants and 1,300 certified medication assistants in the state. And the next slide, this is just to reflect that the numbers really don't tell the whole story, because somebody just doesn't come into the profession and stay there. I think this what this slide is showing you, that in terms of the, for example, the CNAs, we issued almost 32,000. This is in the last 10 years. We issued almost 32,000 CNA licenses, but currently there's only 18,000 of them in practice. So they constantly, we find with CNAs, come in, maybe work a while, and then leave to either go on to other things or to go on sometimes to be an LPN or a nurse. But there is a constant turnover of applications coming through our office in terms of CNAs. RNs, on the other hand, are more stable. You can see for the RNs and the... Yes.
Thank you. Do you track how many of them leave? I mean, from your numbers, it would be a little deceiving if a high percentage of them were moving to the further training and up through the ranks. Do you track the ones that leave and go into other disciplines of nursing?
I'm Pat Miles. I'm the budget officer. We do currently have a database we implemented about 5 years ago that we have been able to query and find out. Out of the active RN population, we have several, I would say about 2,000, maybe 3,000 people who at some point were CNAs that moved on, but the vast majority simply do not renew their CNA. About one-third of the CNAs do not renew their certificate in their first renewal cycle. And so we have a very small cadre of people, about 25%, who might be considered career CNAs. They have continued to practice for over, let's say, 8 or 10 years.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moss Henderson.
I know with nurses, we will lose our licenses if we don't renew it. And I forget, is it every 3 years that we renew to, every 2 years that we renew? And as a manager, I mean, we would check to make sure that each nurse has renewed. They were required to show their renewal license. But with all of the CNAs, I'm wondering if that level of adherence is followed like it is with RNs, because are they required, or like nursing facilities required to make sure that their certified nurses are continue to be licensed?
Chair Richardson, Senator Moss Anderson, yes, they are.
Okay.
Exactly as the same as nurses. Every 2 years, the CNA must renew. I think that's when we find out that they don't renew, that they expire, and
I was just wondering, but is there audits or checks to see if the facilities are actually checking their licenses to make sure that they're current?
Senator Moss Anderson, I think it's SPD that goes and does the site visits for
SPDs.
The senior and people with disabilities out of the Department of Human Services. When they go and do their site visits to nursing homes, they check. That's one of the criteria that they check, is to make sure that everybody who's working in the home has a license or a certificate. Thank you.
Please continue.
Next, we are going to talk about the agency organization. Our agency is organized under functional lines, and they consist mostly of the four major divisions of investigation and compliance, consulting and policy, licensure and customer service, and central support. And this is the organizational chart as we are functioning. Here it is in terms of the governor's budget by function, in terms of our different organizations. And then you can see that, let's start going back, the licensing and certification department is about 22% of our budget. The customer service center is about 12% of our budget. The largest percent of our budget is investigations and compliance, is about 27% of the budget. The nurse monitoring program, which is a volunteer program for nurses who have substance abuse or physical or mental disorders, where they can go in and be very tightly supervised and still remain in practice if that is safe. It's a 5-year program. That is about 6% of our budget. The practice and consultation group is about 9%. CNA testing is about 10%. Central support is 9%. Administration is about 4%. And the board activities account for about 2% of our budget. The board members, they consist of 9 members. Seven of them are nurses, and 2 of those 7 nurses are licensed practical nurses, and the other 5 are registered nurses. And then we have 2 public members on the board. They come from different geographical areas throughout the state, and currently we have someone from Ashland, Medford, Salem, Eugene, LeGrand, Pendleton, and Portland. Of the 7 nurses who are on our board, as I said, 2 of them must be licensed practical nurses, and of the 5 registered nurses, 1 must be a nurse educator, 1 must be a nurse administrator, 2 must be registered nurses who are non-supervisory and involved in direct patient care, and 1 must be a nurse practitioner. The board meets about 5 times a year, and also does conference calls when special issues come up that can't wait for a regular scheduled board meeting. The administration and central support. This concern consists of the executive director and my assistant. It also includes central support, which serves those functions serve the agency as a whole. These are functions such as the budget manager, fiscal, human, and human services, and the communications person. Due to the size of the agency, individuals with essential support are often providing direct services as well. They're not just into management service, but for example, somebody in the essential support is the cashier, and so she actually is doing direct work by processing the e-commerce renewals and all the receipts and payments to the agency. The licensing and customer service includes the traditional functions of processing applications for licensure and renewal. Plus, this has the customer service center in it. It also has the production center where we issue the actual licenses, and the information technology section is included in the licensing and certification section. We had 3 licensing technicians, and they issued more than 7,000 new licensees last year, and more than 27,000 renewals were processed in the same year. And the customer service center receives about 4,600 calls a month that they process. Also, the federal rules require that both a written and a skills exam for certification take place for nursing assistants. We outsource this function. We currently pay $82 for a full nursing assistant exam. $35 of it is written, and $47 goes to the clinical part of it. The volume of testing is highly variable from month to month, but averages about 300 written exams and about 334 clinical exams per month. And approximately, and we'll talk about this later, approximately 10% of those people who are scheduled do not show up to take the exam, and that has a fiscal impact on our agency, as we will talk about later.
What, Mr. Chair, what percent was that that don't show up?
About 10%. Yeah. Senator Westman. Yeah.
Might be a cheap self-screening mechanism.
The Consulting and Policy Group, this is a group of 4 consultants and with 1 administrative assistant. It was formed in 2004 as a realignment of the agency's organizational chart and goals. The 4 consultants each specialize in 1 population group. So we have a nurse consultant for advanced practice, and she deals with the nurse practitioners, the nurse anesthetists, the nurse midwives, and the clinical nurse specialists. Then we have 1 for nursing education, and she's the one that works with all the nursing education programs in the state. We have 1 for RNs and LPNs. She mainly works with nurses in the state regarding standards of practice and scope of practice issues. And then we have 1 who works with the CNA population group. They identify emerging issues. They provide specific practice advice. They provide policy analysis. They do many presentations throughout the state. And as I said, this group is also the ones that approve the nursing education programs and the nursing assistant programs in the state. The next group is nursing investigations and compliance. The primary function of this division is to investigate all complaints reported to the board. These nurse investigators also investigate the criminal background of any applicant, new or renewals, who reports or is found to have a criminal background history through our LEDS checks. And we do a LEDS check for every application that comes in the board office, both initial and renewal.
You've talked about compliance investigation. What about competency investigations? Same when you have complaints about incompetence or abuse or whatever, how does that happen?
Chair Richardson, they come in as complaints. If someone has a complaint about somebody who is incompetent, they come in and are investigated in this department here.
Okay, and how transparent are the consequences or results or findings from those investigations?
If you're
a doc and you want to hire a nurse, can you call the board and say, I'd like to know the number of complaints that have been filed against and the outcome of those complaints?
Chair Richardson, we do have in the board office what we call the IVR, which is the Interactive Voice Response System, that any employer or the public can call into the board office 24 hours a day and check on the status of a nurse's license. And if a nurse has disciplinary action taken, it will indicate that the nurse has an encumbered license and that they need to call the board for further information. We also have put that on the website so that people can go on the web and also find out the status of nurses. If a nurse has had disciplinary action taken, then that becomes public information. And yes, we do release that to the public, and they can get a copy of the final order of the board's decision on that. The investigatory information is confidential under state law, but the final order of the board is public information.
As far as the Bar Association is concerned, lawyers, if you want to know how many complaints have even been filed against an attorney, you can call and they'll tell you the number of complaints filed, not necessarily when there's been action taken. You're saying that's not the case. It's only if there's been findings and action taken. Is that correct?
Chair Richardson, that's correct. Yes.
You said under state law.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is state law. It's our confidentiality law. If you want to know the statute, I'm sure that...
Okay.
Excuse me.
You don't have to tell me that now, but I'm interested in seeing what that is. If you know, that'd be fine.
Yes, actually. this is Kim, Chair Richardson. This is Kim Cobrain, who is program executive for the Practice and Compliance Department.
Thank you. Good morning. The board operates in part under statute 676, 165, 167. That provides that all of the information obtained in the course of an investigation is confidential and not subject to public disclosure. That includes the fact of a complaint. And you're absolutely right, Chair Richardson, to say that, yes, in the bar, you can find out the number of complaints that have been filed. That is not true with this particular board, nor with any other health licensing, professional licensing board. That piece of information, if you will, is kept confidential until such time as the board has actually made findings that there has been some sort of misconduct, and at which point that is then made public.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of the complaints that are filed, what's the percentage that after an investigation are actually found to be valid and discipline occurs?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hansen, the board conducted approximately 3,200 investigations last year. Of those, 712 actually were conduct cases. Of those, 217 resulted in actual board disciplinary action. Sorry to say I don't have a calculator to quickly tell you what that percentage is, but you can get a sense of how that breaks down.
Okay, thank you.
The other part of this if this department is the nurse monitoring program, which I talked about previously. These are for nurses who have physical, mental, or substance abuse issues that affect their ability to practice safely. This is a 5-year program which provides a non-disciplinary option for those willing to work a treatment program, and they work under very close supervision. And they work very closely with the employers of these nurses. We currently have about 360 people in the nurse monitoring program at this time. So that's an overview of what the departments are for the Board of Nursing.
Okay. Questions thus far? Let's go into performance measures.
Right. Well, during the last year, we, as all agencies, have participated in the statewide process of revisiting our performance measurements and establishing performance measurements and reviewing these performance measurements with the Oregon Progress Board. According to the report from the Progress Board, we meet all 7 basic criteria set by the Performance Measurement Review Committee. And our performance measurements reflect our 4 agency goals, and again, those are to provide excellent customer service, to ensure the safety of those Oregonians cared for by nurses, to regulate in a manner that sustains the maximum number of nurses in the profession available to work, but without jeopardizing, but keeping the standards so that we do not jeopardize public safety, and effectively participating in joint efforts to address the nursing shortage. And we use our performance measurements to help develop our budget, to look at the quality of our programs, to measure progress towards those goals, and as a predictor of emerging issues that are happening in the agency. Some of our measures have been in existence since the mid-1990s, actually, and others have evolved and changed so that they're more relevant to us. Others are new and measure the efforts of the new initiatives of the agency, such as our new customer service center, and recently what we did this last year was to begin to implement e-government, which we will talk about later on in our presentation. Under the recommendation of the Oregon Progress Board, we directly linked our performance measurement to the agency mission rather than the Oregon benchmarks. But we later indications are that we probably should indicate also how we link to the Oregon benchmarks more directly. So we have done that. And under tab 3, you can see how we do indirectly link to the Oregon benchmarks. This is new for us. Some of this is new for us for the performance measurements. We've learned a lot. And we are ready to go through all 19 of our performance measurements if you would like us to do that, or if you would like us to just highlight some of them, we would be glad to do that as well.
Committee members, what is your pleasure? All of them?
Well,
why don't we let's go through all of them, but we won't spend very much time unless there's questions, okay?
All right, that's fine. Just
read them and
okay.
hit.
They are under on tab 3, you will find them. And what we put under tab 3, Chair Richardson, is the 2004 analysis. So this is the analysis of our goals, and it shows you the latest information that we have on these goals. So the first performance measurement is the percent of customers who rate the board positively in the following service areas: accuracy of information, courtesy of staff, and ease of access to the staff. This is one that we have had data on since the year 2000. And the way we get this data is through a survey. We survey around a selection of our nurses every 2 years, our licensees, every 2 years.
Okay.
And as you can see, we have met our performance measurements in the areas of accuracy of information and of ease of access to staff. We did not quite meet our goals in the area of courtesy of staff by 2%.
Well, once you're in your mid-90s.
We're all in the mid-90s, that's correct. But still, as a result of that, we have put our staff through more customer service training, and they are aware of this. And I do think that 90% is good, but we can always do better. And
mirrors on each one of their desks saying, smile.
That's right. Actually, Chair Richardson, some of them do have the mirror on the desk.
That is an actual technique that seems
correct.
To work.
That's
Representative Henson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the basic questions I have is on all of the customer survey type things. What are the percentages that are returned, or how big of a sample are you using?
All right. Representative Henson, she actually does the survey, so she will
have to. Smile.
Chair Richardson, Representative Henson. Actually, we've been doing this survey since 1996. Every 2 years, we send out 100%, if you will, survey for a period of time. It goes out to every person who receives a license from us. So whether it's exam, endorsement, or renewal. The sample is about 3,200 total sent out, and we get about a 50% return on those surveys. Nurses especially are very good about returning surveys.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move ahead.
Performance measurement number 2 is a percent of all automatically called distributor telephone calls answered by a live representative within 10 seconds. We have a customer automated call center distributor as part of the call center, and so it records every telephone call, not the call, but it records the number of telephone calls coming into the agency and how long it takes for us to answer them and how many of them are answered prior to somebody abandoning the call or hanging up. And so that's what we're trying to measure here. Obviously, as you can see, we had fairly lofty goals for that, but the 10-second we have not been able to meet. We've only met it at 70. We're requesting a change in this performance measurement because we're thinking that the 10 seconds is somewhat arbitrary. For some people, 10 seconds is too long to wait, and for other people, 10 seconds is not too long to wait. So I think what we're trying to measure instead, or what we're proposing to try to measure instead with this, is how many people hang up before we can get to them, because that's what their tolerance is, whether it's 10 seconds or 2 seconds or 20 seconds. So that's, we are trying to revise, we've requested the change to revise this one.
Have you any data to support that change? In other words, there are, and this is a huge issue in private industry, and there are companies and associations that deal with telephones techniques, you know, and so forth. And I would imagine that there are guidelines that have been done quantitatively by organizations telling businesses how long you can wait. Is it the second by the second ring, or however that works, rather than just removing something because it's hard to attain? It might be better to have some background or basis for it.
And Chair Richards, I didn't mean to imply that we were removing it because it was too hard to attain. It was just that we thought that 10 seconds was kind of arbitrary and capricious in some ways, because, as I said, for some people 10 seconds is too long, and some people it's not. We have tried to benchmark. For example, we found that the Ritz-Carlton says that they have a benchmark of 20 seconds, and some other people had 30 seconds, and some of them have one call or one ring or two rings. Other boards of nursing, we are not aware of any performance standards specific to this, so we're kind of on our own here. And that's what, as I said, we decided what we would look at is how many calls were abandoned, because those are the people who felt they had to wait too long before they could get a live person on the telephone.
Mr. Chair, how many rings is 10 seconds?
One ring and 80. Three ringy dingies.
Oh, Senator Bates is making a breakthrough. The therapy is working.
Medication's wearing off.
That's what I'm saying. That there are studies that could say, you know, for satisfaction, you need to do it within X amount of time. And so that's what I was getting at.
True. But in terms of a measure and first impressions, I actually think that's a very intriguing measure. Going in the front door, public service, I'm calling, you know, government.
Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a person.
I'm getting within a satisfactory, reaffirming amount of time. A small thing, but...
It is a small thing. I'm not attracted to the idea of, well, we'll just determine it based on how many people are frustrated and hang up.
Which is
kind of a negative way to do it. It's like a doctor saying, I'm going to base it on how many people die, whether or not I continue this. I mean, there's other ways to do it. But it's not, of course, that important, but it's still an issue. But we can continue.
Well, Chair Richardson, Senator Westland, I mean, I think that what we want to do is we want to be responsive, and we do want nurses, when they call, they're very busy. That's why we looked at this in the first place. They're very busy people. They're probably calling on their break or on their lunch hour, and we wanted to be responsive to them. 70% of the time, we're answering it within 10 seconds. But if someone's, you know, if someone's absent that day at the call center, or they're out to lunch, or they're on a break, and maybe there's only two people there, that's when we can't get to all of them within 10 seconds. And
all I'm saying is that 10 seconds may be too short, but just to eliminate it, is not okay. Necessarily working on using a performance measure to measure a attainable mm-hmm. and desirable performance. Okay, let's go to next.
Look at that. The third performance measurement is percent of business days in which the licensure verification hotlines, which are the telephone and the internet, that's where people can check about the status of their licenses, at the close of business day is current to the day before, so that this is the percent of time that our IVR is up to date in terms of the correct information when people call in to check a nurse's license. And we were able to meet that 100% of the time last year. And that's a 24/7 hotline, or the website, of course, is also 24/7.
Good.
Performance measurement 4 is renewal of percent of renewal applications processed within 5 working days, and this is defined as reviewing and either issuing the license or notifying the person of the application deficiencies. And we, this measure, in 2004, the average renewal processing time was 9 calendar days, but only 58% of the renewals were processed within our 5-day standard. Equipment and personnel issues accounted for the disappointing results. In reviewing the results of the first 8 months of this fiscal year, we find that 73% of the renewals are completed within 5 days, with an average of only 7 calendar days. But we are, we have not met our goal of 95% within 5 working days. We are getting them out within 7, but not 5.
Okay. I mean, this is one of
the
things.
We hope that one of the things.
If we're talking about getting out a person's medication, that's one thing, but this is one of those measurements that probably doesn't have a great deal of significance to it, whether it's 5 days or 7 days, unless they're being terminated from the ability to work, and that's not the case.
And Chair Richardson, we send out renewal notices reminding nurses that their license is due 60 days in advance of this, so we hope that doesn't happen, that they wait till the last. Of course, the last minute, of course, sometimes they do, but this was a result of we renewed about 27,000 licensees last year.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and we hope
Senator
that
Bates. can we have a right to discuss here that maybe some of these performance measures can be dropped?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 5 or 7 days, you guys are doing a great job. 7 days is fine. Why just drop it? And the next performance measure is the same way. In fact, I'm a little concerned you're pushing it too fast. Okay.
You know. Well, the problem is, if you're trying to meet a performance measure, you may end up doing something that's more, doing less than something that's more important because you have to.
Nurses have a lot to do.
Yeah, and you might let somebody slip through the network that they shouldn't be in there. And
okay.
I mean, 7 days, 7 working days to get your license renewed?
Deborah makes a good point, and that is that, you know, it's good to manage your office, and so it may be that this would be a better the internal measure for you to keep it really isn't necessary to report to us.
Report.
You'd rather, you know, focus on those things that are more outcome based.
Chair Richardson and Senator Bates, though, I do want to assure you that the philosophy and the culture in the agency is not to renew licenses just to meet our performance measurement. I mean, we put them all through the LEDS check, and they have to meet all the other requirements. I just want to assure you of that.
No accusation.
But I think it's a good point that we could use this as an internal management performance measurement. Okay. So then number five is the same. It's only it's with initial licensure. Do you want me? I'll go on. Performance measurement number six is the average number of daily sites to the agency website. Obviously, we have met that goal. Last quarter of 2004, we were consistently in the top 15 agencies most visited by web. You know, more top 15 of people who visited our website. We were the top. How am I saying this? I'm sorry. We were in the 15 most popular websites in the state.
Wow.
I could make jokes about, but I won't.
Representative Hannah. To me, this, thank you, Mr. Chairman, this might be one of those measures that we don't really need to know.
Okay.
Although, have you worked at allowing those who are trying to get their license renewed to do some pre-work, or are they downloading applications through this process? How are you streamlining just the fact that they're visiting? To me, that's not a measure, but what are they doing when they're there? Is it helping the process, speeding it up, saving you people? Let's
Chair Richardson and Representative Hannah, yes, we have in the last year or so, we have done a lot with the website. We've redesigned it. We have the forms down there for our applications. We are also one of the first agencies now to go online so that nurses can actually renew their license online. And so I think a lot of them are very interested in that. We also have all our rules and regulations online. We have upcoming meetings online in terms of task forces and the board meeting. We have what we call current issues. So I think that they're using it, and they're saving us a lot of telephone calls, I think, coming into the board office because they are using the website.
Just as a follow-up, I mean, a performance measure that might be relevant in terms of how much work you're taking out of the office and putting on the applicant that's accessible to them through the site might be the percentage of applications that are renewed via the website versus taking that phone call. Because looking at the website's one thing, but if they're doing something there and saving you time and effort, then it's making a big difference, right? Or should be.
Representative Hannah, I think that we do later on have a performance measurement for how many people are renewing their license online. This is just a new program, so we don't have a lot of information, but we do have that.
Actually, then I'm just making a list. 4, 5, and 6 could all be internal measurements only, and they really did not need to be brought to our attention.
Thank you. We appreciate this. This is a learning experience for us. I mean, 19 performance measurements are a lot. I think what we tried to do is to try to get every aspect of performance measurement for every aspect of our agency, and we probably overdid it a lot, but it helps to have this feedback from you. So
that's
thank
fine.
You.
And number 7 also. Again, the legislature is concerned about the outcomes and the performance, so we're interested in those that will tell us how the board is actually functioning, client satisfaction, effectiveness in investigation, turnaround time on investigation, those kinds of things, because delay in that area could be a problem that could affect the public, you know, those kinds of things.
Okay.
But let's go through them.
Thank you. Okay, performance measurement 7, I think, did you say? Just go ahead.
Yeah.
I think that's just the number. This is to try to get the outreach for the board, to try to measure how we are doing in terms of outreach. So,
well, let's talk about average number of people reached by informational presentations by staff per month. Number of people, are we talking about presentations to nurses then?
Chair,
Richardson, yes, to nursing and nursing students and consumers, if they ask us. This is the number of people that we reach when we go out to do presentations. About to talk to them about the Board of Nursing.
Yeah, you know, that also is an internal thing. It's not what's really vital is what happens as a result of that. You know, and a number of new applicants to come into nursing or, you know, those kinds of things that that are a consequence of the action. How many people you talk to or how many shows you put on is an output. It's like how many meals are served. Well, that doesn't help define poverty or how many people are healthy and all those other things. And so it's really the outcomes that are useful for us. And so when you start saying we're actively recruiting additional nurses, that's something we're interested in. You know, how many more nurses this year than last year or the year before? How many more students in nursing programs? Those are things that are useful because they show a result that is desired by the legislature, which is to increase the number of nurses in Oregon because of the consequence that has for the citizens. Okay, 8 is one that
we're deleting.
Number 8 is this is the percentage of e-commerce RN renewals compared to total RN renewals.
You know, this we'd like to keep because it lets us know if technology is being utilized, which is very important to us.
And this is, as I said, we only went online in June of 2004, so we only had a half a month in 2004
to measure.
We're
short on your goal.
That's why that looks so bad.
What are these excuses from?
That's amazing. There's always an excuse. All right.
But what is interesting is that we are, since September, 30% each month since September, 30% of the licensees are renewing online. And that is, we have benchmarked that with other state boards of nursing who started to go online for the renewals, and that is about the same as we're seeing in other boards. So we are confident that we can almost now up to 26% of the renewals that are going out. And as the word gets out there in the nursing community that you can go online to renew your license, I think this will increase even more. We're putting it in our newsletters. When we go out and do presentations, we're telling nurses about it. But it's going to take a while for the culture of nursing to...
When you come back 2 years from now and you're doing 65% or more, I bet, of nurse renewals online, one thing that would be nice for you to address is the amount of staff that you use when you're doing 100% over the phones and how you've been affected and how the economies take place and the fact that you need less staffing to do that, and so either you are cutting back staff or that they're being utilized in other areas. Because lots of times when agencies come in, they make these efficiencies, but they forget to have a consequence that is beneficial. In other words, it's business, the same people doing the same thing, but they're not doing it the same way, and yet it's like there's been no change, and there will have been a change, and so it'll be interesting to see how that efficiency helps you out.
And Chair Richardson, we agree with that, and we are going to track that, so that hopefully we will have that information to you when we come back here 2 years from now.
Great.
We're very excited about this program. Mm-hmm. Be able to do that.
Got it.
Okay. The firm's measurement number 9 is the percent of cases investigated and referred to the board within 120 days of receipt of complaint. This performance measurement was selected to correlate with the requirements of ORS 676.165, which requires healthcare regulatory boards to receive investigative reports from their staff within 120 days of receipt of the complaint. That's not just the Board of Nursing, but other boards as well. And these cases involve complaints of both of poor nursing conduct or behavior. These complaints can come in by patients, family members, co-workers, or employers. And this, we see this performance measurement is very critical to the board's mission of protecting the public. The board began to use a new database in 2000, and now that database has allowed us to really track and analyze the disciplinary data that we have been getting. The target for this measure has historically been for 98% based on the ideal level of performance rather than what could reasonably be achieved. And we have found that given our staffing resources right now, we are having a great deal of difficulty trying to meet this performance measurement.
Okay, what is being done to improve? And this is for the last 3 years, you know, you're...
Right.
And I'm going toward improving this. This is 4 months, so it's not like within 7 days. So it would be worthwhile to give us an explanation as to why it's not being met and what is being done to change this.
Correct. Representative, excuse me, Chair Richardson, members of committee, this is my area of responsibility, and I have a lengthy answer, which I'm going to truncate a bit.
Right.
The essential problem was that, and I came to this position about 2 years ago, and when I came, I saw that there was a lot of work. In fact, there was too much work trying to be done by too few people, and we had some real inefficiencies. So it doesn't surprise me that we had this kind of number. One could query where the 120 days even came from and whether that's a realistic standard. And in a sense, the 21% indicates, well, that's how many simple cases we have, conduct cases, and the rest are actually much more complicated and require more investigation. That's one issue. The second is that we don't have sufficient staffing. I've taken the staffing that we had. Last legislative session, in fact, we got one and a half FTE. One was for another healthcare investigator. The other half was for support staff. I actually revamped that to turn that healthcare investigative position into a pure investigative position and had that individual positions assigned to just doing criminal background checks. It's a lower cost position, and I could get greater expertise of that type of investigation to apply to that area. The other thing I did was I took the savings from that position and applied it towards the other part of the 0.5 FTE and created a complaints intake, so we're much more efficient in getting those complaints in and prioritizing them and getting them assigned to where they need to be. Having taken these efficiencies and created more uniformity in approach and process, and now looked at the data for 2 years, what I see is that we need more people, and you will see as part of our budget request for two more investigators to try and help resolve this. The numbers actually support more than two, but I'm personally more interested in a very incremental approach to trying to fix things instead of just, you know, throwing bodies at this. I want it to be a much more studied approach. The database and being able to have a mature database that allows us to actually understand where our workloads are and the character of those workloads has been just absolutely key in trying to come up with ways to present this and resolve this. I mean, this is deplorable, the number here. Not something as hard as we work. I mean, and we work very hard. It's depressing to then see at the conclusion of it, gee, you know, folks, you struggled hard and you hit 21%. That's demoralizing to people, and we're kind of setting up we're setting ourselves up to fail on that rather than setting ourselves up to succeed.
Well, this is not a new issue, and it's not a new board.
No.
And your comment that, you know, for 2 years you've been looking at that, well, if you're in business, you wouldn't be looking at it for 2 years. You know, I mean, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you specialized your complaints? In other words, in any way, specialized?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hanna, I take that question to mean, do we assign particular investigators to particular types of complaints?
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of the Investigator 2 position that looks at the background checks, no, we have not. The other investigators are our nurses. They understand the context of where the complaints are coming in. They understand the importance of what actions and omissions have occurred. This is something actually we also find the licensees are very appreciative of, that they are being critiqued, if you will, by their peers and not just an investigator. As a result, each of our investigators, because we do get a wide range of things, all of them need to be very familiar with current practices.
Follow up. I mean, we only have 2 years of data here, and we got the book this morning, so I'm not basing this on a bunch of research, but a quick look at your numbers would indicate that a very high percentage of your cases are substance abuse.
Yes.
So in other words, why not specialize and put a few people or two people or a person, put somebody who is a specialist in your largest caseload so that you get a specialty process going to work through that. I mean, for instance, if 34% of your cases from 02, and we don't know what they are in 03 and 04, but if you look back, it was 21% in the prior reporting period. I would think by attempting to specialize those things that you do the most of, you might have a better result. And certainly we need to work at ways to speed up the result, and I would think that'd be a major issue.
Chair Richardson, Representative Hannah, we do have, I guess I hadn't thought of that in terms of specialization. The nurse monitoring program focuses particularly on impaired nurses, and the vast majority of those are substance abuse issues. The board does take a remedial approach to substance abuse to try and keep the practitioner safely in practice. So to that extent, yes, we do have in-house expertise and do utilize that as part of the investigative process. Typically, when these cases, substance abuse cases come in, it's because they've had a positive UA at work, or their behavior was such that it caused questions, or they've got a history of DUIs or something that comes up. And the process that we utilize there, I don't know, is particularly susceptible to needing expertise in substance abuse, other than to say, you know, what did you do and why did you do it, and what have you had a evaluation, what does that tell us in terms of where are you in a disease pattern, and if so, can that be helped? In which case, if it is, it's turned over to the nurse monitoring program for RNs and LPNs. So I think it's an excellent suggestion. I think it's one we have in some areas, and I would relish the idea, actually, of seeing if there are other areas that we might have focus.
Mr. Chair? Senator Bates? Mr. Chair, I apologize. I'm going to have to leave and go take care of some medical malpractice issues the state has a little problem with.
We're sorry about that.
Yes. And
I hope it works out well for you.
It's not personal. Well, it could be, I suppose. Looking at this issue, you're responsible for about 60,000, roughly 60,000 licensees. You've got two, maybe three people doing that. Most boards with that kind of a number would have four or five.
Actually, they have 11. Plus, they have three additional that deal just with the substance abuse, and they have 44 FTEs for the department. Is that correct?
Very close, Chair Richardson. We have eight investigators, one of which is that non-nurse investigator, and two nurse monitoring coordinators, and then we have three staff persons associated with that group to provide support.
Correction. Your problem, I still feel, is manpower, has been for a long time. These investigations are very tricky, have to be handled very carefully. The only concern I have here is I saw your presentation of wanting two or three more FTEs. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is dropping the target. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, Chair Richardson, Senator Bates, I wouldn't say dropping the target so much as trying to understand what is ideal versus what is realistic. And I guess I would actually, if I may be so bold, pose that question back to the committee to say, what should we be trying to do here in terms of ideally we'd want to do it 100%. But is that what we want to be trying to measure ourselves against? Or is it something less than the absolute ideal that we want to measure ourselves against?
Well, Mr. Chair,
I
fully realize there are certain, hopefully rare cases that will take longer than 3 months to resolve. Some of these take a year or two.
Yes.
I've been involved with you in trying to help you through some of those, but those seem to be pretty rare. I think a realistic target of 90 or 95% where you resolve most of your issues in 3 months is good for the nurse, and good for patient safety, good for the institution they might be working in, or the private office they might be working in. Dropping it down to 40 or 50%, I think, is inappropriate. 100%, I would believe it to be inappropriate also. I'd ask you to go back and look at that carefully. You're asking for more FTE to handle the problem. I understand that. But I would suggest that you keep that target high, probably in the 90% range. So you do have room for those cases that you absolutely will take years to resolve, but that you have a target that's reasonable, meaningful, and answers the question of the patient's safety and what's good for the nurse, too. He or her needs resolution of their case. They can't be in limbo for months and months and months and months. So I would ask you not to drop that target to these levels. Go for the extra FTE and report back to Lechtenker how you're doing.
Okay. And you need, I'm sure you do, but as you make more efficient use of online certification, we know where some of that savings of FTE can go. You have 44 positions. You have 11, according to the Orbit's budget narrative, in the investigation area, plus 3 for the nurse monitoring program. How you utilize those 15 or 14 there is, of course, your own affair. You've got 600 to 700 cases a year. This is 4 months, and as Senator Bates mentions, it's certainly something that needs to have conclusion as much as possible. And even if it was 90%, that was saying that 1 out of 10 is just going to go on no matter what, but that the goal for 9 out of 10 would be an appropriate goal and not merely cut it back because it's been hard to achieve again. There's just, there's lots of issues that we don't know about as far as management, utilization of personnel, and those kinds of things. If when you come back in 2 years, it's still at this, this kind of level, then we would expect that there would be a report explaining why, because there's obviously at that point something going on that we don't know about that prevents this, the majority of these from being handled within 4 months. And if that's the case, we need to know, what that would be. Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since this is getting to be primarily a performance measure discussion, I've got to weigh in on a couple things. When we look at a performance measure, and most of the documentation that we're seeing is 3 or 4 years old, and on this one in particular, as you start to assess why this has happened, in order to really analyze it well, we need to see what the agency has requested in terms of staffing, license fee increases. I've been here for, this is my fourth term, there have been a couple sessions where agencies were told absolutely don't come forward asking for more help, and there was a real effort to keep license costs and stuff to be minimal, which obviously if you're either denied resources or denied either in terms of the dollars or staff, it's hard to perform. We don't most private businesses don't work that way in terms of not providing the people with the tools that they need to get the job done. The other problem that we can have, and I don't want to get into to micromanaging, because that's simply not our job. Our job is to set policy. But if you look at the complaints received, some of them are a lot more serious than others. I would think practice before licensure isn't a, well, it's something that you want to correct. It's probably not quite the level of substance abuse or sexual misconduct. Delegation of teaching supervision, again, I would think is more of a technical compliance issue. Mm-hmm. I guess if you wanted to resolve those all very quickly, you could hype your numbers pretty fast. And I'm not terribly interested in terms of whether you hype your numbers. I'm more concerned about what are the real results of a breakdown of, and what's so tough on these things is you look at cases referred to a board within 120 days. There are so many different ways to look at that one piece of information. If a lot are coming in 130 days, that's not a big deal. If a lot of them are taking 2 years to resolve, that's a huge deal. I mean, it's kind of like going back to the discussion we had on the telephones. If you got a call center and it's recording stuff, whether you're only talking about the 10-second limit or how many people hang up or whether your average call time is 13 seconds or what, it's a whole bunch of different ways to measure the same thing, and good management practice looks at the whole picture. And from this particular measurement, I can't really tell what the whole picture is. And certainly, if we deny you the resources to fix the problems, then the responsibility might tend to be more here than with you. End of my soapbox.
May I have an opportunity to respond? Okay.
Please, very briefly, because
yes.
We have plenty to go through and we're not going to make it.
Let me, if I may then, Chair Richardson, Representative Hansen, refer you to Section 5, which actually does have a breakdown of the average number of days that a case were open. I'm not particularly pointing to this to say, aha, look how wonderful we are, mostly just to point out that, yes, we have been tracking that information because it is important whether it's 120, 140, or 440 days. That is a distinction that's not lost on us. I would also like to draw your attention to tab. We have a prioritization Tab 9 is a memo that the board adopted, which prioritizes cases precisely for the reasons you were talking about. We do take cases that have actually involved actual harm or given the top priority, and we do those until they're done. Ones that are lesser, we don't initially put our resources to that. Where we get trapped in that, if you will, is that the law that we try and meet here, this benchmark, doesn't distinguish between that. It simply says a complaint that walks in the door. And, you know, I will feel actually quite comfortable, and I think you would yourselves, that if a someone who is practicing without a license simply because they hadn't renewed it took 2 years, so be it. But if we were able to address the issue of someone who was causing physical abuse and we did that within 2 months, that was a good choice of our resources. And unfortunately, that's not going to show up.
Okay.
So I think we need
good.
To...
We've done enough.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. What we would like to have would be to have a comparison with other states in the Northwest region as to the investigation, the time that they spend on their cases, so that we can have a comparison between how we're doing in Oregon versus us, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you for this information. We received it today, and so we haven't had a chance to digest it, but we will spend copious amounts of time doing that.
Well, maybe. So let's let's move on, please. We've discussed in depth number 9. Let's go to number 10.
A prevention measurement number 10 is to discipline licensees with a new complaint within 1 year of board closing original cases with a disciplinary action. And what we're trying to measure here is how successful was the board in determining the appropriate action for the offending practitioner. We feel if we were successful in determining what was the appropriate disciplinary action that should be taken, then they wouldn't be coming back within 1 year for with another complaint. And this is a new measure, so we didn't have target goals for 2003 and 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been tracking it since the year 2000. And so in 1.5% of the time, people who we had disciplined have come back within 1 year. And our target for that is going to be about 1%.
Okay.
Any questions on that one?
I'm trying to think how you really affect that. You're just measuring this.
Yeah, we're trying to see about recidivism.
Okay.
You know, we're trying to see, because if we're not doing the appropriate action, then we're thinking that these people are going to get another complaint on them. Whereas if we took appropriate action, there's not going to be another complaint on them.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Number 11.
Number 11 is the percentage.
We have 19? Okay. Great. Number 11 is looking good. Move in here.
11% of complaints that were resolved via stipulated agreement or default on notices in lieu of a contested case hearing. And this, again, is to measure how many cases can we stipulate with the licensee so that we don't have to go to these very expensive and time-consuming contested case hearings. And we have our target is 99%. We almost reached it. We got 98.
Okay, you're doing very well on this, but it also has a reflection on number 9.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have 99% of your cases solved by stipulations, then to say, you know, they have investigations and hearings and all this, that's actually occurring in 2% of the cases, so it's not that burdensome of an aspect of the investigation if only 12 or 15 of them out of 600 or 700 are actually going to hearings. So, you don't need to respond. I'm just saying that we need to work on that 120-day.
Yes.
Thank you. Number 12.
Number 12 is the percent of successful participants in the 5-year nurse monitoring program. These are participants who have graduated or are still participating in the program in good standing. Again, these are mostly nurses with substance abuse in there. This is a 5-year program. They have up to 3 chances of relapsing and being able to stay in the program. We don't want 100% target in this one because there are some nurses that shouldn't complete the nurse monitoring program because they have relapsed, and we take them out of the nurse monitoring program, and then they have to go through the disciplinary program of the board.
And this is a difficult one for you, really,
yeah,
because you don't know if you're measuring success or,
yeah.
I mean, you want higher success, then lower your requirements, you know. I mean, you're fogging a mirror, you can stay. I mean, that's obviously not what you're interested in doing. And so it's kind of a guideline for you to help assure that you're doing everything in your power. So what do you think? Is this something that's more of an internal measurement, or is this something that's useful to the legislature?
I think this is a common sense issue that needs to be handled
internally.
Okay, I'm going to put down that that's an internal one as well.
Okay.
You guys know.
Okay.
13.
13 is the percent of all renewal applications that are processed through the state law enforcement database system and have arrest, convictions, or other court actions recorded. And our point here is that if we screen successfully, we're going to reduce the number of repeat offenders licensed by the board. We do leads on every applicant for initial licensure, and again at the time of renewal. And we feel that these people who come up positive are definitely posing a risk, as evidenced by their criminal behavior, to very vulnerable patients in the state. So we take this one very seriously.
But are you saying that you're measuring the bad findings that you have as compared to just assuring that you're doing the check?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what you're measuring?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. This is Pat Miles, Order of Nursing, Budget Officer. What we are trying to do is, by measuring the repeat offenders, if you will, in the renewal cycle, we're only looking at the number of positive hits, the people who have had an arrest or conviction in the last 2 years. And we feel that if we properly counsel people or properly screen them through initial licensure, that we should see the number of people doing these things go down. Either we've taken them out of practice because they were dangerous, or they understand that they shouldn't be driving while intoxicated, or maybe they've been entered into the nurse monitoring program. Somehow we've changed their behavior. We'll never get 100% negative hits, if you will. We'll never get down to zero, but about 1% seems to be a reasonable goal when you have 60,000 people you're licensing.
Would you tell me again, what is it you're measuring here?
We're measuring upon renewal. We're looking at the last 2 years, how many people had an arrest or conviction in Oregon in that period of time. These are new events.
Okay, so, but you have no control over what they may have done in their private life. It seems to me that the measurement should be that we, in a timely manner, do the check of every renewal, mm-hmm. and then you take appropriate action as necessary. But to measure how many of them have had criminal activity during the course of time,
if that's what you're measuring here, I'm confused.
Well, Chair Richards, I think that's a good point. I guess what we saw is before we started doing the criminal records checks, before it was known that the board was doing it, there were about 25% of, for example, the CNAs who were trying to get licensed by the board had a criminal records history. And now, as we've been doing these checks and the word's gotten out there, we have decreased the number of people trying to apply for a license to less than 1%.
Okay,
so
I understand your point,
and that's a good point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We need to make sure that you're doing the checks, but we're assuming that.
And we
as far as the other things, that you can do in yourself.
And we do 100% of the checks, so
okay,
for initial and renewal.
Great.
So we'll take that out. Okay.
Okay, Senator.
I know you want to move on, but this is an internal Oregon Ledge check.
Chair
2 years, they're licensed, doing pretty good, kind of routine. Is there any mechanism for out-of-state, I mean, the same licensed nurse, I mean, they go to Denver, Biloxi, or where, like Lori, you know, she goes out-of-state and goes, no. Yeah, but for an out-of-state discretion that may have implications on the integrity of the
Chair Richardson and Senator Westland, there's two things here. One is that the National Council of State Boards of Nursing does have a disciplinary data bank.
That's what I'm getting.
Right, that we can access. The other is that the Board of Nursing is proposing legislation this session for fingerprinting. So that we can, because nurses are such a mobile population, that we would have the authority to do fingerprinting through the FBI for those.
And that's kind of where I was going with some of these high-profile cases.
Yes.
It happened right in my own hometown.
In phase two, we'll be going into that more detail.
Sorry.
You need to
interrupt.
Okay. All right. Let's move ahead.
14 is the present of the registered nurse programs.
Excuse me just for a minute. We welcome you all here. We assume you're not here to testify. So we will proceed. What we're doing here today is evaluating the Board of Nursing. This is a group that oversees all the nurses in Oregon to make sure that they're licensed and that they are trained so that when you go to the doctor or the hospital, the nurses are really the right people that should be helping you and helping the doctors. And so they're going through some of the things that help them to know that this is being accomplished and helps us in the legislature to know that the money that the taxpayers are spending indirectly, or that the supporters, the nurses, are spending through their licensing fees and all that, are being properly spent. And so this is going to be really exciting to you. But try and contain yourself as we go through this exciting dialogue. But right now they're talking with us about different things that they measure to make sure that that their job is being accomplished in a way that that can be measured, you know, by results. So we're looking at performance measure 15 now or 14?
14.
14. 14, please.
Chair Richardson, I'd just like to say that maybe we have a lot of future nurses in this room.
And by the way, we need good nurses, and we just were talking about what nurses get paid a few minutes ago, and nurses get pretty well paid, plus they do a tremendous service. And so if you don't know what you're going to do, then you might...
Be a nurse.
Be a man. Be a nurse. Man. And girls.
30, 40, 50,000 bucks. Study hard.
That's right. Oregon's brightest and best is here. Well, we're glad you're here. All right, number 14, please.
Number 14 is the percent of registered nurse programs that have a passing rate of 85% on the national exam. We see that one of our stakeholders are the students of nursing education programs in the state. And so we set the standards for nursing education program in the state. So this is one of the ways that we try to monitor the performance of
Mr.
these
Chair.
Programs.
Senator Mass Anderson.
I have a concern when I see this chart, and I would really like to have an explanation, because it looks like in 2002 we were way high, and now for some reason the passing rate of our nurses has fallen. And I'm wondering if there are new programs, or if there are some programs now that are very weak, and do you track by where they were trained, and can we focus in on those programs that do not, for some reason, are bringing our grade down?
Well, Chair Richardson, Senator Monis Anderson, on tab 7,
you will see how we monitor the nursing education programs. And if you look up at the top of the, under page 7, under that memo, it says 77. But that shows which schools have a passing rate.
Well, that didn't take long.
Come back and you spend more time. Bye.
It's not exciting enough. But, Senator, you can see on this page how we track that. And when these programs do not meet the 85% passing rate over a two-year period of time, then we ask them for a progress report. We ask them to look, do a root cause analysis, essentially, of why are their passing rates going down, yeah. What are they going to do about it, and they come back and report that to the board.
Okay.
Great. And as you can see, too, also here, I think we probably gave you more information than you want to know, but we actually have the national exam reports here that shows where Oregon stands compared to other states in terms of the passing rate on the national exam. And it also has the passing rates of each individual school. So okay, as I said, this is probably more information than you want, but this shows how we monitor this.
Now, we're looking on bait stamp 77, and in the right column it says 02 to 04, and it lists all the colleges for Oregon, the lowest of which is like 81.4%, and most are in the high 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to performance measure number 14, and it says that for 2004, the pass rate is 77.78%. And so where did those lower achievers come from, if not from these colleges?
It's a percent of 2 years instead of 1 year.
So they did really well in 03.
The schools, not the people. This is the percentage of the schools. This is not the percentage of individual nurses. This is the percentage.
And so we have the really high achieving nurses going out of the state, and that's why the numbers are lower for Oregon.
Chair Richardson, no, this is the passing rate for the school per se. But the nurses, the individual nursing scores of individual nurses are we're usually up in the top, always in the top 10 of the United States. And I think in the last year we were number 6.
You're number. Can you get to what we're talking about?
May I clarify, Mr. Chairman? Because we've always had this requirement that a school had to report to the board if they fail to meet that individual for that school standard of 85%, rather than looking at the overall how many nursing students or candidates are passing. This is a percentage. We have, I believe, 16, correct, it's changing, but about 16 RN programs in the school. So if eight programs did not meet the 85% pass rate individually, we'd only have a 50% rate for this performance measure. If we had 100%, it would mean that every individual program has an 85% or a higher pass rate, and I think we have two that were not meeting that pass rate. So that's how the numbers came about. It's a measurement of the program as a unit instead of the student as a unit.
Okay, well, that's fine. We won't go any further on to that. Thank you. Number
that's 15. Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it. 15% of LPN programs with a passing rate of 85%, 100%, that's good. 16% of nursing assistant programs with a passing rate above 85%, both written skills. This is nursing assistant programs. We're at 74%, going down from 78%, looking better than 2000. Any comment on these?
Well, this is one of the comments I want to make is that we're asking to change this performance measurement because right now what we're measuring is all students who take the nursing assistant programs, and we wanted to make it standard with the ones that we do with the RN and LPN programs. So we want to say it's the first time takers rather than all takers. So that's the change we'd like to make on this.
How does that reflect the quality of the measurement? I mean, you're saying if somebody does it lousy on the first time, we don't want to count them the second time.
Mr. Chair, what we're trying to do here is we're measuring the effectiveness of the training program, of course, and if the training program is effective, the student will pass the test the first time. What is happening in the current measure is we're also counting how well the person that failed the first test, they're getting kind of counted twice, if you will, in the thing, and whether or not they passed. So we want to make it a very clean population.
All right, first time out the door. The measurement is focused on the program's preparation, on the success.
Yes, Chair Richardson, all of these are program measures, not individual measures.
Okay.
And again, it's because we approved the nursing education programs and the nursing assistant program, so we're trying to have some kind of performance measurement about how well they're doing and how well our standards are. Number 17 is, again, as I said, we tried to take all of our programs of the board and try to have a performance measurement. So we're not sure about this one, but we're trying to measure that the percent of agency administrative rules that are periodically reviewed and evaluated within 3 years for unnecessary barriers that might prevent eligible nurses and nursing assistants from practicing nursing in Oregon. We're trying to see how well we do that three-year period of administrative reviews. To make sure that we look at our rules to see are there any barriers that we are putting up that don't need to be there.
Good. That's not done enough.
So,
okay.
Yeah, and then the final one is, I'm sorry. And number 18 is the percent of emerging public policy issues resolved within 6 months of coming to the board's attention. And this was an attempt to try to measure the responsiveness of the board to the public and to our stakeholders. So oftentimes, a group will come to the board and say that they have an issue that they would like the board to look at. And so we're trying to measure here how responsive are we to that, how soon can we get back to them or get a task force going to address that issue. And if, you know, the outcome is a position statement or if the outcome is a change in administrative rules, how long does it take the board to respond to that stakeholder's request? As I said, we're learning with these performance measurements, but that was the intent of this performance measurement. What we have found is that the 6 months is difficult in some ways because the board only meets five times a year. And so we always try with every issue that comes before the board to at least have two chances for the public to respond to it. So we have kind of a first hearing issue on it, and then we always have a second time. So there's two board meetings where somebody can come and give public testimony and respond to a position paper, a draft rule, or whatever with the board. So we'd like to say 100% of the time, but we're finding that it's because of the timing of the board meetings that we're not necessarily able all the time, or the length of the task force, or how complex the issue is, that we're not always able to meet it 100% of the time. But that's okay. What this is about. And then finally,
That's an internal thing.
It's an internal thing, okay.
That probably doesn't help us too much, but we're glad that you're...
Is that true for 17, too? I'm sorry. Is
it? Yeah. Look back at 17. Yes.
Okay. So, all right. So, we'll continue.
Those will be eternal meetings.
Giving you more information than you cared to know, right?
Well, you know, we don't want you to have to spend too much time focusing on things that really don't help us do our job.
Right. Exactly.
But they do help you do yours.
Exactly. And the last, number 18, the last one, number 19, is the number of basic RN students graduated from Oregon nursing education programs and practicing in Oregon. And this isn't, you know, something that the board really can control, but the intent of this was to try to measure the partnerships that we have with the other nursing organizations to increase the number of nurses in the state.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Senator Munis Anderson.
Is there any way for us to know how many of those that are trained in Oregon actually leave and go practice in another state?
Senator Munis Anderson, yes, there is. Yes, we do have that.
And how are we on that?
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to get back with you on that information. We can do that.
I'd prefer not to send very many out of state. It would be, I'm not sure what we can do, like you say, what we can, but I would like to have that information.
Okay.
Well, and conversely, how many Oregon attracts from us?
Yeah, how many are.
And we do have that data, and we have that in the binder, actually. I think it's probably under licensure.
That's okay.
Yeah, no,
but it is in here. I do want to point to one piece of information. On 2004, it says that we graduated, number of basic nursing students graduated from nursing education programs in Oregon. It says 705. This is at the end of the fiscal year in June. And so a lot of the graduates hadn't taken the exam and passed. And I wanted to give you an update that actually that number is 875.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the 74403 was a correct number, though?
743, yes. I'm looking at the 705, the end of 2004.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's correct. That was on June 30th.
No, I understand.
But a lot of the programs were just ending on June 30th, and so...
So actually, is this trend real, that in 2002 there were a total of 700 graduates, in 03 there was 740, and in 04 there's 875?
Well... No, I mean 705 is correct, but for that date of June 30th. But I am just trying to say that there were other graduates. I'm sorry.
Are these also June dates?
Yep. Yes.
May I explain?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, we have two constraints on this number. One is the number of nurses graduating, but the other is they have from Oregon schools. But the other is they had to have been licensed during that fiscal year. So each of those numbers is correct as far as they graduated from Oregon schools and they were licensed in that year. So the additional graduates that graduated last summer that you would think graduated in fiscal 2004, actually licensed in fiscal 2005, so they'll be in this year's number.
All right, so the jump is because it's more than a 12-month period that's included in that 875 number.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't make myself clear on that.
Representative Hanlon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're not marketing, are you? You are not a marketing organization in any way.
Chairman,
the reason I say that is I'm not sure that this is... Again, to statistically critical for our measurement.
Unless you are, if they're recruiting nurses.
But I don't think that's their role.
Chair Richardson and Representative Hannah, no, that is not our role, and we do not do that. We do not do the marketing. As I said, this was just the intent of trying to be a partnership in solving the nursing shortage. But you're right, we don't really influence this performance measurement.
Okay. If you don't influence it, you don't have to give it to us. and that also applies. I went back and looked at 14, 15, and 16, and there is, you know, certain interest in it, but it really doesn't help us do our job better. So those are internal issues for you
right.
as well.
Okay. Thank you.
you'd mentioned at the beginning of your presentation, I'm not sure if it was a nursing coalition, but it was an organization that does try and attract individuals to the nursing profession and maybe attract foreign nurses to Oregon. I'm not sure. Can you tell me, do you have any relationship with that group?
Chair Richardson, the organization I was talking about is the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council.
What is it again?
Oregon Nursing Leadership Council.
Okay.
And that's made up of the major nursing organizations in the state. And yes, we are a member. In fact, in the last year, we were president of that organization.
Mr. Chair,
And also that has the Oregon Center for Nursing. The out branching of that is the Oregon Center for Nursing, which does do the recruitment for nurses into the profession.
Okay, Senator Moss Anderson.
Yes. Now you say you want to eliminate 14, 15, and 16, and I feel for my. I would want to keep those. I would like to know how our schools are doing.
You know, I have no strong feeling on it. If you think that is a performance measure that the legislature needs to review, we can certainly leave that in.
I think it's important information.
Well,
it shows a trend.
Mr. Chair, it's also a evaluation criteria. Choose the school ability, you know, information for our students. Do you want to go to Chemeketa or Mount Hood or?
Well, yeah, I think it's good information. And now, if you're considering a career change, that would be absolutely valuable. I'm not sure that in the legislature that information actually gets out to the people, but if we could send it out or somehow. But if you'd like
some
to
way to
them,
disseminate that information, I think is important. Okay.
All right, so 14, 15, and 16, of your recommendations?
I would like to, until I understand the process a little bit better and see
what about
if
19?
I really need it. I would like to keep 19 also.
All right. In deference to our resident nurse and center, we've looked at what we've suggested is that shifted to internal measurement only are 4, 5, 6, 7, 12, 13, 17, and 18.
Okay.
So that's a recommendation that we can make then.
Thank you. And Chair Richardson, I just wanted to also bring your attention on tab 10 is the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council strategic plan, and it talks about some of the progress they've made in addressing the nursing shortage in the last since 2001, and then it also mentions the new goals for that organization. So that information might be of interest to you.
Okay. Are there questions?
And that ends our 19 performance measurements.
Well, good. It's been very informative. Is there anything you'd like to bring up? Then, not. We appreciate very much the preparation, the wealth of material, and the fine work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And thank you for the presentation today.
Do you want us to go into the
agency? We now shift into priorities. What
okay.
tab is that?
Okay.
That's
number four.
Four.
The list is on tab four, Chair Richardson.
Got it.
In mid-January, we submitted our LFO priorities for a 10% reduction from the governor's recommended budget, and they're contained in tab 4. The agency activities were divided into six groups and prioritized through the following criteria. The criteria that we used was, one, what were the programs for the board that put or kept licensees in the workforce? And we felt the licensing and the activities leading to licensure affected the most people. Also, these are the programs that fund the agency activities, since we are a fee-based agency. So that was our first criteria. The second criteria was the public safety through the investigations, complaints, and discipline of licensees. And while, you know, this is of critical importance to the public safety, it really doesn't occur outside the context of the licensing activities, because we had a long discussion about whether we should put the investigations before the licensure or the licensure before investigations. So I just am trying to let you understand what our thinking was there. Okay. And then third, the criteria was that those activities which promote, enhance, and support the primary activities, but they either impact a very small population or they don't provide direct services. So that was our criteria for the list. And then, as you can see under tab 4, what the list was. It was licensing and certification, the CNA testing, because that's federal law, the practice investigations, the nurse monitoring program, nursing education, and then administration.
Okay.
And then finally, the 10% reduction option. If required to reduce the governor's recommended budget by 10%, we selected two activities to change, and both of these are related to the CNA testing. The CNA testing, as we said, is subsidized by federal Medicaid and Medicare funding, and in return for that funding, we have to meet federal standards for testing the applicants. Currently, all costs of the CNA programs are included in the Board of Nursing budget in order to receive these federal matching funds. So the two options that we selected is the best way to find a 10% budget reduction without drastically reducing services or impairing public safety are these. One, and when this gets back to the no-show rate for the CNA test, approximately 10% of the testing candidates don't appear for their scheduled exam. Regardless, under the contract that we have with the testing vendor, we have to pay for those exams. So one of the options would be that the cost of these testing no-shows would be shifted from the agency to the applicant, reducing the budget but not impacting public safety or customer service for the agency.
Would you mind explaining why would they not
pay a fee before their date for scheduled exam. And then if they don't show, it's their own problem.
Representative Richardson, what happens is the person sends us an application fee, which includes their testing fee. We schedule the person for the test, and they are given notification of, in fact, they get to choose two alternate test dates, so they've chosen these dates. They're sent a notification to be at such and such a place at such and such a time. These people that don't show up really have forfeited that original payment, and that is what's used to pay the testing service for that, for not showing up. What we're talking about is when they come back to reschedule and they have to pay the additional fee, what's happening is they pay us, and then we send the money to the testing service that hopefully they've shown up the second time, have taken the test. What we're proposing in this first option is once we have vetted them, if you will, that they are eligible to take the test, if they don't show up and then want to reschedule, that financial transaction and that reschedule is between them and the test service. We would not be the intermediary either for the money or for that reschedule. And then when they pass, then the results would come to us as if it was the first test opportunity, and we'd complete the licensing process.
Okay. Sounds great.
So that doesn't go through our budget. Essentially, that would not go through our budget.
The second option would be that currently we use the federal match money generated by the exam fee paid to us to cover all the costs of actually licensing the person, as well as the direct cost of the testing. So if the applicant paid the testing fee to the test vendor, then our costs would be reduced dramatically, but the applicant would still have to pay the entire cost of testing, just what Pat said, with the certification fee. So those options would, if we took them, would meet the 10% reduction. However, what it does do is it results in the loss of the federal funding match for us, because we wouldn't be getting those fees and then being able to match them. And it could increase the cost to the industry, the nursing homes, because many times the nursing homes will pay the testing fee for the nursing assistant.
Okay.
So now that ends
right.
Our presentation.
Thoughts, questions, comments? Appreciate the information. Thank you for your presentation.
Much. Thank you.
And we're done today.
Okay, thank you.
Now, as far as our committee is concerned,
I'm just bringing him up to speed on what we covered.
Okay, well, that's fine.
She carried my water a couple of performance measures, and I appreciate her. Thank you.
Okay. I have a draft that I'd like to share with you of some criteria. Oh, she was slipping in, huh?
Yes.
That's fine. Okay, for some program criteria evaluation suggestions, certainly it's just a guidance. It's an idea that they could be useful as we each evaluate and prioritize the various agencies that the co-chairs have asked for us to review. And are there any questions on the email that I sent out this morning?
Have you seen
that? Okay. Well, I sent it off late last night, but it explains what the expectations are from the co-chairs and how we can meet them, kind of a schedule that will allow us to meet the requirements for reprioritizing by the co-chairs. And what it asks is that as a group, we review the State Commission on Children and Families prioritization list between now and Friday, and if we think that there should be adjustments in that list, that we make our own suggestion at reprioritizing, and a Word format list is included as an attachment, and so you can make your own priority suggestions, and when you get them back to John or Sheila by Friday, they then will compile. There's 14 items, by the way, on the Children and Family, the Commission on Children and Families. And so if you want to change them at all from what has been proposed by that commission, then you get that back to John and Sheila by this Friday. They will compile them and correlate the various
suggested changes by Monday, and then as chair, I'll go ahead and meet with any of us that have some major differences on what those prioritizations might be. And then also attached to the email is a copy of the 73 DHS prioritizations that they have provided. With
now,
an
say that again.
Okay, DHS gave us their priority list.
Yeah.
I had 73 lists.
Right.
I've attached to the email a Word format of those 73 with their list in a blank, so you can actually print it off and then make your own numerical adjustment if you think that the 73 that they gave may need to be revised.
When do we have the 73 in?
By Monday.
Okay.
And, yeah, being new, Chair Richardson.
Pardon?
Being new, I'm going to rely a lot on, I know what I think, but will we have a format where we could get input from the others on the committee, or everything's
yes.
just going to be given to
well, there's
Sheila
a,
and John?
Well, there's a group tonight, and this afternoon at 3:30, we'll be getting a kind of a review from Mickey Lansing and some others on what is really involved with the Commission on Children and Families. And then after we get that out of the way, you know, we can discuss what might be useful to review some of the aspects of DHS. And Director Weeks, Cindy Becker, and others are available to give us additional guidance, assistance, and answer any questions we might have.
I will do this on my own, but since it's the first time for me, it's like I'm in the dark sometimes, and it sure would be nice to see how the others who have been through this several times are looking, because they know the issues so much
That's
better.
Fine. Yeah. We can work out a way to do that.
Two things, Mr. Chair, just real quickly. A lot of this is, as I said before, Sophie's choice. It's not clear. Huge gray areas, and we're all going to be in different places, and some of them kind of arbitrarily, I think, will kind of think this is the best, and may not have any good reason for it, than the gut feeling sometimes, because it's that kind of a complex thing. The other issue I'm more concerned about is we had a conversation with Co-Chair Senator Schrader, and I'm not sure that his vision is the same that we all have, or what that vision is. He is talking about a very open process. My sense, what he talked about to me about, was a very open process next week where we do the prioritization, our prioritization in the public, and take some form of comment on while we do that. Is it next week or the week after? Maybe the week after.
Be next week.
Next week. And I don't know if the other co-chairs have the same vision, if that vision has been given to our chairs, our subcommittee chairs, and where we're at this, because I'm a little unclear in my own mind if next week we're going to be here working in an open dialogue about that prioritized list.
Well, I sent copies of the email to both co-chairs, and I will follow up with them today. And if there's going to be adjustments, then I'll be back in touch with you, and we'll do whatever we need to do to comply with their wishes.
Mr. Chairman, also on Friday we'll have a full Ways and Means, where I think we're getting additional explanation from the co-chairs of the process as well.
What we do is subject to adjustment.
Adjustments.
All right.
And, Mr. Chair, having said that, and this may be an incorrect assumption, but I'm actually very proud of this committee and your leadership, because I think we've refined this process, at least as it works for the uniqueness of this particular budget. I mean, they're all different. They all have different challenges, uniqueness, degrees of difficulties. I think you've done a pretty good job of creating a format and a structure that really works. If they want to do something different, that's obviously their prerogative, and you will do it. But
I'm sure they'll give us certain latitude, I'll discuss it with them.
You know, so far, I think this is so good, and let's just do it.
This is new, and this is important. The idea of prioritization and then funding based on priorities, which are based on core principles that the governor and the majorities in both houses of this legislature have come forth, this is different, and it's an experiment, and it's in process, and I hope it works out.
And one final comment. I've had the pleasure of going through all the budgets as a member of a subcommittee with the exception of public safety, and I would tell you the DHS budget dwarfs the rest of them as far as the difficulty of doing this. It just, there's no mountain to climb like the DHS budget. So it's important we do it, but just a little caveat that we won't get it right the first time perfectly. No. And it's going to be real tough to do, and I appreciate your leadership and what this committee's tried to do in doing that. This is a huge project.
Well, in essence, we have the first cut to give direction or suggestions to the co-chairs, who then will take a cut and then meet with leadership from both houses, who then will ultimately make a decision as to what is going to be necessary for us to complete this process. And with the new format that we're following, it's new for everyone. It's interesting process.
I was just going to mention, thank you, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Mona Sanderson, our work yesterday with the Insurance Pool Governing Board. We reviewed that yesterday in the work group.
I wasn't privy to that since I was in committee. And
right.
So I feel
right, that's what I'm saying. I want
to have to rely on information that others gave rather than...
Right. Yeah. That's why I was bringing it up, because you weren't there yesterday, and it was a fairly... I think we had consensus on that process.
Great.
Okay. With that, we will adjourn. Thank you, everyone.